Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol. Later on in the show, Alex Kirkland will be joining us as we'll be reflecting on the news that Courtois is out now for the rest of the season. Meanwhile, Sir Jim Radcliffe doesn't want Mbappe. We'll be talking about why with Rob Dawson. But I apologise, I know it's a bit tiresome.
And what are you doing, Dan?
We didn't want to talk about it again, but turn the clock back to Manchester City against Liverpool. Brilliant game. Manchester City should have given away a penalty, of course. High foot from Doku on McAllister. Everyone agreed it was a penalty. The officials made a mistake. In the end, 1-1. Move on with our lives, OK? Which we had done. But then wonderful Howard Webb, Stevie, has said...
What a shock.
..that it was the right decision not to give the penalty. This is exactly what he had to say. This is this TV programme that he does back in England to explain incidents that have happened way long ago. You see something that's pretty subjective and therefore stays out of it. And the feedback we've had from people within the game is that it's a pretty subjective situation. It's split opinion. Rob Dawson's here. Rob, we'll hear from you and your magnificent beard in a moment. But Stevie, let's start with you.
There was another piece to that we didn't see where he says that it's unfortunate that Doku catches McAllister in the chest. I mean, that's all you need to hear. When was it ever OK, regardless of whether you got the ball or not, to put your studs in somebody's chest? I mean...
Well, this is the subjective part, if he got the ball...
Well,
if...
that is stretching subjective to about as far as you can. Listen, does he get the ball first? Yes. But he carries on and sticks his studs into the chest of McAllister.
I don't think there is even evidence that he gets the ball first. I think the whole thing is a mess.
I mean, it's just nonsense. It really is.
Now, there's an independent committee as well, which is made up of three former players within that committee.
Right.
And that was a split decision 4-1 that VAR was right not to intervene.
And who told us this?
What do you mean?
Who told us that?
Howard Webb told us.
Do you know, isn't that weird? It's like policing yourself and coming up with the right answer,
No, but it's independent, Stephen.
Independent. So it is, I don't think so.
And some of the statements that he made, as he went on and kept talking about this very instance, he also said, look, if it had been given the other way, VAR would not have been involved either. Check complete. So it's essentially an admission that, yeah, it probably was a penalty, but it wasn't given, so VAR did not get involved. Had it been given the other way, then it would have been a penalty. Look, the truth of the matter is, I don't know who is involved in this committee. I don't know who these former players are. I don't know what the split is. It's 100% a penalty. It wasn't given, and yet here we are still talking about it.
What's the point, Rob? Not life, but this particular television show that we see from Howard Webb, because it just seems to be a vehicle for him and the PGMOL just to dig themselves massive holes.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of it is to explain controversial decisions and to give fans a little bit more insight into how those decisions were made. You know, the fans get to hear the conversation that's made between the on-field referee, the VAR and the assistant VAR. You know, in some instances, I think it's been quite helpful for fans. I think in this particular one, it's just muddied the waters even further. I think everyone can see that that is a penalty. It's a free kick anywhere else on the field. You know, there is a feeling that it's happened at 1-1 at the end of a very, very tight game between two massive teams chasing a title, and it's easier not to give the penalty. And I think fans watching that show with Howard Webb tonight will go away thinking that that's the reason that decision's been made. I don't think they've got much clarity at all, really. I agree with the guys in the studio. It's an absolute stonewall penalty.
Right, I've had enough. That's it. Let's move on from that, because I think we're just going around in circles blaming Howard Webb and officials and VAR and anything.
All right. You okay, Dan?
Meanwhile...
Whatever you want, Danny Boy.
No, but meanwhile, Sir Jim Radcliffe has been given quite an in-depth interview, and he was asked who he wants to see win the Premier League, and he said, I hate them all. They're all the enemy. It would be good for Arteta, actually. It would be good for him because he's done really well. And Arsenal have been patient with him, which is nice as well. So, Rob, putting two and two together in this situation, in that he likes it when clubs give managers time, and Ten Hag hasn't had too much. He's had a bit of time, but maybe not as much time as Arteta's had. Is there a suggestion that he is favouring Ten Hag to stay?
I don't think we can stretch it that far. Ten Hag hasn't been given any kind of guarantees by Sir Jim Ratcliffe or his right-hand man, Sir Dave Brailsford, that he's going to continue in his job next season. At the moment, he has got a contract. He signed a three-year deal when he came in from Ajax. That contract runs until 2025. So in theory, he has got another year left. But until Sir Jim Ratcliffe or Dave Brailsford comes out and says beyond any shadow of a doubt that Erik ten Hag is staying as manager next season, there are going to be doubts about whether that is the case or not. And that's down to the fact that this has been a really poor season for Man United. The two things that cost managers their jobs are poor results and new owners coming in. And at the moment, Erik ten Hag is dealing with both of those things. Obviously, there's still a chance that he may turn the season around. It's possible that he could win the FA Cup. They could still scrape into the Champions League next season. I think, though, still that Sir Jim Ratcliffe is looking at that manager's position and thinking, is he the right man for the job? And there's an awful lot of question marks about that at the moment.
Do you like Mark Ogden, Rob?
What, personally? Or
yeah.
Yeah, I think he's all right, yeah.
Well, that was not the most convincing, because I'm wondering if there's like a rivalry between the Manchester correspondents when it comes to the big stories. The reason I bring that up is because Mark has been writing about the special relationship that Ineos, of course, part of the new ownership of Manchester United, and Gareth Southgate seem to have. And that is why Gareth Southgate, when you have a look at the odds as to who is going to be the next Manchester United manager, is in the equation. And Rob, I can't imagine that Manchester United fans are particularly excited, given Gareth Southgate's domestic form, that Southgate is favourite to take over.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I can understand the interest in Gareth Southgate from Sir Jim Ratcliffe's point of view, because if you're judging on purely on fit, Jim Ratcliffe wants a manager to come in who's going to work in an overall structure, reporting to a sporting director. It's likely to be Dan Ashworth, working with a head of recruitment and a head of performance. United in the past have given managers an awful lot of power, more power than perhaps they would get at other clubs. And Sir Jim Ratcliffe wants to end that. He wants the manager to be a cog in the machine and not this sort of overbearing overlord who can do what they want. The days of that, you know, we used to see with Sir Alex Ferguson, those days are over. And so when you look at it from a fit perspective, Gareth Southgate ticks a lot of boxes. He knows Dan Ashworth very well. From the FA, he knows Sir Dale Brailsford from working with Ineos. So on that side of the debate, you could understand it. Well, you're right pointing out what the fan reaction may be. You know, Gareth Southgate hasn't managed a club game for 15 years. And even then, he took Middlesbrough down into the Championship and was sat trying to get them promoted back to the Premier League. He's done a good job as England manager. He's got them to a World Cup semi-final. He's got them to a Euros final. But even then, there are still some England fans who think he's still pragmatic, he's not adventurous enough, he doesn't pick enough exciting players. So you can understand why Gareth Southgate may be an attractive proposition as Man United manager to Sir Jim Ratcliffe, but the fans aren't particularly sold, and it will take an awful lot of PR around that appointment to convince Man United fans he's the right man for that job.
What's more likely at the start of next season, Ron? Ten Hag or Southgate to be in charge?
Honestly, I think it's completely up in the air. I don't think that Sir Jim Ratcliffe has made a decision on his manager. Certainly the people around Erik ten Hag are saying that they don't think that he's made a decision. Erik ten Hag, for what it's worth, understands that he's under pressure because this season hasn't been good enough, but he also doesn't think that he's a dead man walking. He thinks he has time to turn this around and convince Ratcliffe that he's the man to take them forward next season. I think a lot may depend on what happens between now and the end of the season. If they were to win the FA Cup and get into the Champions League, it would be very, very hard for Ineos to part ways with Erik ten Hag. Also, on top of that, you've got the compensation that would be due to him and his staff. You're talking of upwards of 10 million at a club where money is already tight because of FFP restrictions. So there are all these things come into play. I think these are a crucial couple of months now for Erik ten Hag if he wants to stay as Man United manager.
Southgate makes no sense at all. I mean, Southgate coming in would mean that the fans, in my opinion, would be against him before they even kicked a ball. Why would you do
Which
that?
We've seen Which is never, I mean, ever
not,
a good
Yeah, start. He's not a coach that has ever and makes you think of front foot football. You know, we're complaining about how Man United play, and look how City play, how do Liverpool play, how do Arsenal play, how do the best teams play? Well, they play going forward, they play on the front foot. You don't have Gareth Southgate and that sort of football in the same breath. So if he appoints Gareth Southgate, before a ball's kicked, the fans are going to be grumbling.
Ten Hag wins the FA Cup, give him the job.
Well, that's the sort of the ironic part for Manchester United fans, that they'll be more than happy to win FA Cup, but then that's also him essentially securing his position as the manager of the future for Manchester United. So you have to ask yourself, as a Manchester United fan, is this what you really want? Because in winning FA Cups, does that then do away with the struggles, all the struggles? Are you able to put everything behind you and say, you know what, Erling Haaland was right all along, and he is the guy for the future? And he's not really the guy for the future, given the fact that, guess what, with new ownership, they're always sort of looking over his shoulder. They're always sort of lingering. And so I think the worst thing that could happen for Manchester United is that they do just well enough, that they give just enough signs for Ten Hag to continue on, and then next season starts and is back to the beginning, back to square one. And back to square one hasn't been good for Ten Hag or Manchester United, and so therefore you go searching for a manager once again. Because guess what? That new ownership, if he was barely hanging on, the moment that the team struggles once again, they're going to be on him right away, and they're going to try to make a change right away. So if you're going to make a change, if that's part of your plans for the future as a new ownership, then do it. Do it, regardless of what happens in the FA Cup or not.
Aside from who the new manager might be, what about new members of the squad that can join under Sir Jim Ratcliffe in this summer? Well, this is what he had to say. It's not that clever buying Mbappe. Anyone could figure that one out. More challenging is to find the next Mbappe or Bellingham or Roy Keane. To this point, it may be not that clever to buy Mbappe, but Manchester United are one of few clubs that could afford that calibre of player, Rob, and it seems a little silly. If you've got the ability to bring in those sort of players, why would you start, like Chelsea, for example, start hanging around for youngsters you can pay a lot of money for because you think they're going to bloom later on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the wider point that Ratcliffe is making there is that he's seen over the last 10 years that United's recruitment has been based around buying expensive superstars. You know, you're talking about the likes of Angel Di Maria and Paul Pogba, players who came in on massive fees with big reputations and failed to deliver at Old Trafford. So the wider point that he's making is that instead of trying to target these superstars, and you know, let's, you know, don't forget that they've got absolutely no chance of signing Kylian Mbappe, even if they wanted to. He's going to Real Madrid, so forget that one. But he doesn't want to target these established superstars. What he's suggesting is that they will look to buy younger talent and nurture it themselves. Now, United have tried to do that alongside buying established stars in the past as well, and even that hasn't worked out. The recruitment overall over the last decade hasn't been up to scratch at all, and that's why they've fallen behind the likes of Man City and Liverpool. So they need to sort the recruitment department out. You know, beyond picking who the manager's going to be or who the players are going to be, they need to sort that recruitment department out. They need to have guys in place, best in class, who can identify these players and slot them into a squad and make them title challengers again, because for too long it's just not happened.
No, they've spent a lot of money, wasted a lot of money, which could, of course, been invested better. But it's a balance, isn't it, Stevie?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the superstars come once you've got the club on a solid base with some good young players, some good experienced players, and you're on the up, and then you start adding your superstars to take you to the Champions League or take you to fighting for the Premier League. So I think right now, regardless, you wouldn't get an Mbappe. Nobody of that elite talent is going to look at Manchester United right now. And so it's a process, and United fans just have to realise that it's going to take a rebuild, and it comes from the bottom. You've got to start at the bottom and build the core, and then you start building up, and then you start bringing in superstars. But the recruitment, 100%, is what it's down to. You know, you look around at the top teams, and their recruitment has been absolutely spot on. Yes, they've spent a lot of money, but they've got it right. And that's why your Arsenals and Liverpool and City are fighting for Champions League and Premier League. Man United have to start again.
If they're going to start again, then it begs the question, is Ten Hag the guy for that rebuild? Is he the guy to nurture this young talent? Given the evidence that we have seen so far, it would seem that the answer to that is a very clear no. So I go back to your last question, Dan. FA Cup or not, you cannot make a decision based upon the fact that you win FA Cup or not, because it's a very short-sighted decision-making process, and it gets you into trouble because you're saying, because we won FA Cup, then everything must be well with this club, and that's not the case. And if you're going to do a rebuild, you have to have a clean start, including with the manager.
Think about it rationally. Before the Liverpool game in the FA Cup, a sound defeat would have spelt the end for Ten Hag. So how does winning one game and then possibly two more change to you're the man to build this club? It don't make any sense.
If the club is indeed going to go through a rebuild, questions around, well, where does Bruno Fernandes fit within that restructure? And this is what he had to say about his horn this season. Manchester United, it hasn't been a successful season individually. I'm perfectly aware that I have the capacity to do more and better as always. But this is one of the things that United are going to have to address going forward, isn't it, Rob? Because if you want to, as Stevie says, completely start from the bottom of this club, you need someone within that attacking midfield role to do a lot better than Bruno Fernandes has been.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why he said that today. His performances haven't been at a level that we've expected at Man United. You know, the numbers of goals and assists when he first came in from Sporting Lisbon were an awful lot higher than they have been this season. I think probably he would argue that he's been playing in a particularly poor team, and it's very, very hard for creative players to perform well in teams that are underperforming. I think that maybe whoever the manager is next season or whoever's looking at the recruitment over the summer will probably think that United squad has bigger problems than Bruno Fernandes. They need another striker. They need one centre-half. They probably need a midfielder. They need at least one full-back. You know, Bruno Fernandes has got his shortcomings and he's taken an awful lot of criticism from outside the club, but also from inside. You know, there are Man United fans who don't think that he should be Man United captain, that he's not the right character for that role. But when you talk about that squad and you look about the work, you look to see the work that needs to be done to fix that squad, I think there are bigger problems probably than Bruno Fernandes.
Well, let's address another long-term Manchester United player who was exceptional at the weekend. It was the Marcus Rashford that Manchester United were hoping for when they handed him that big contract. Obviously, this season has been a massive letdown. And on one side, you could look, yes, this is exactly what Marcus Rashford can offer you going forward and defending. But then you also say, well, why has it taken the second half and FA Cup quarter final for us to see this from Marcus Rashford when we've seen it so little throughout the rest of this season?
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I don't think anyone is arguing that Marcus Rashford hasn't got the talent and the ability. The problem that has been, ever since he made his debut as a teenager, the problem he's faced is not finding that consistency. He found it a little bit last season post-World Cup and managed to end the season with 30 goals. Far and away his biggest tally since turning professional. But we just haven't seen it often enough. You know, the top players, the players that he wants to be mentioned alongside, the likes of Mbappe, Haaland, Salah, you know, these top tier forwards, they do it week in, week out. They score every single week, or not just score, they contribute, whether it's goals or assists. And Marcus Rashford hasn't done that. You know, there are games and spells of the season where he will score three goals in three games or five goals in five games, but then it'll be another 20 before he registers a goal or an assist. And that's just not good enough for someone that really should be hitting the peak of their career. And someone who wants to be mentioned as one of the best players in the world. It's really going to be a challenge for Marcus now to find that consistency, because he's just not going to be, he's not going to be classed as a world-class player until he can do that. And this season is a case in point. You know, last season he did really well, scored 30 goals. This season he's been nothing like at the same level. And there was even a point in the season where he lost his place in the team entirely because Ten Hag couldn't trust him defensively. You know, he can't pick and choose the games he performs in. It can't just be quarterfinals of the FA Cup against Liverpool. It has to be after the international break against Brentford away. It has to be against Luton at home. It has to be every single week.
So what happens? You've got Manchester United who want to be fighting once again with Arsenal, Manchester United, Liverpool domestically in the Premier League, with Real Madrid, with Bayern Munich, with PSG in Europe. Yet you've got Marcus Rashford, who wouldn't get into any of those teams on a massive contract. Mm-hmm. You've got Bruno Fernandes, who wouldn't get in any of those teams in the starting 11. Yet, as Rob said, you've got such a big rebuild. That's almost down the list of your priorities at the moment. But it's going to be a big problem, isn't it, when you're trying to get this consistent rebuild going.
And I think that takes us back to Ten Hag. You know, we all you have to do is look down south and look at Spurs. Look at the job that Postecoglou is doing. Now, that's man management. It's not just coaching. It's not just X's and O's. It's man management. He's got every single one of those Tottenham players playing way above what they did last year. Ten Hag has got Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford playing way below what they did last year. So it's not just coaching tactics, it's man management. And it goes back to the manager. You bring another manager in who gets people like Rashford on their toes. Alex Ferguson was a master at keeping people on their toes. Klopp's a master at keeping people on his toes. It looks like Arteta's the same. You look at all the top managers, players under them are consistent because they keep them on their toes. Marcus Rashford has been strolling around for 7 months this season. Yes, a lot of it's down to him, but it's down to the manager as well.
This is a concern, though, isn't it? If United...
Well, yeah, so because let's spin it forward. And let's just say that because of the contractual situation, you can't really move Bruno Fernandes or you can't move Marcus Rashford, and they're going to be part of the rebuild, if you will. And you're now sort of leaning and trying to train with younger guys. What do you think the reaction of Bruno Fernandes is going to be when he is sitting on the bench and a younger guy is playing ahead of him consistently? Does he come across as the sort of guy that he's going to be, go on, young guys, yeah, I believe in you, we're the best. No. The profile of Bruno Fernandes is a guy that if he's sitting on the bench, he is pitching a fit. And he is bringing people with him to pitch a fit. And now you have a malcontent. And you have a malcontent. It's not ideal when you're doing a rebuild and when you're trying to push younger guys and you're trying to build a base for the future. It doesn't quite match what you're trying to do and the personalities that you have available. So if indeed this is about a rebuild, then those guys, in particular Bruno Fernandes, if I were Manchester United, I'd be thinking about a future without him very quickly.
This may be a little bit negative about Manchester United, considering what they achieved at the weekend. We, of course, gave them a lot of love as well over the last couple of days. Some through gritted teeth. Some people weren't as excited when Marcus Rashford got that equaliser compared
to... Oh, how did I feel this was coming on?
This was Nunez giving it away. And then... The walk to the corner. There it is.
He's going to headbutt the screen.
So to be fair, I tweeted this out and someone was like, where's Shaka? Is he having a nap?
Maybe.
This was silent on purpose, wasn't it? As Nunez gave the ball away.
He doesn't know what to do with the hands.
He hit the table at some stage during the game.
I hurt my arm during the game. I hit the back of that chair.
Hey, where are you going? Hey, where are you going in that corner?
This is why, as a writer of ESPN FC, you get accused of being anti-Manchester United. Those sort of antics.
Excuse me, I was very complimentary to Manchester United after the game.
OK, let's look at the FA Cup draw. Let's see what you were doing during that.
I was complimentary.
This is obviously Coventry were drawn first, and this is Stevie praying that it's not Manchester United.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when we were talking about the game.
Unbiased opinion.
But that's fine. Well, do you want me to fake it?
It's fine, Stephen.
A big smile.
I'm not criticising you.
I'm just asking you a question.
Why are you getting angry at me?
I'm just asking you a question.
Right.
Was I complimentary to Manchester
United? Yeah, very much so.
Well, there you go. That's all that matters.
I know. We were just saying that as an aside. It's an aside, wasn't it?
I don't think it's a surprise that I want Liverpool to do well.
It wasn't a slight on your character, Stevie. Broadcasting ability or your professionalism.
Yeah, you want to take a walk to the corner again?
Just a little and finally.
I can assure you, I was holding stuff in.
Rob, thank you very much, mate. Much appreciated. Just a reminder, two semi-finals will be live on ESPN Plus. April 20th and 21st, yet to be decided when Coventry City against Manchester United and elsewhere, it is City against Chelsea.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Real Madrid against Manchester City, of course, will face off in the Champions League. The first leg will be on April the 9th. There was a lot of talk, wasn't there, about the possibility of Thibaut Courtois returning after that international break to start for Real Madrid. Unfortunately, bad news coming out of the Real Madrid camp today that he has picked up another injury and it looks likely now he'll be out for the rest of the season. Alex Kirkland joins us. Alex, how hopeful were people of Courtois playing in that game against City?
Oh, very much so. Absolutely. That was the expectation because he'd worked so hard to get back. He was back in training, first of all, training individually, then training back with his teammates. And Carlo Ancelotti had been explicit about it when asked about this over the last few days. He said, end of this month, Thibaut Courtois is back, available with his teammates. Now, of course, that doesn't mean match fit, but the expectation was that he would be in contention to play against Manchester City. And it's a huge blow because it's not happening now. It's goodbye to that game, it's goodbye to the tie. It's goodbye to the season, we think, for Thibaut Courtois, because it's 4 to 6 weeks out with this injury. Picked up in training today. He was very affected by this. We're told that he was in tears after it happened as he left training. And it's a blow for Real Madrid, because this is Courtois. This is, for me, the best goalkeeper in the world. And, of course, the narrative up to this point had been, look, Real Madrid having a really good season, top of La Liga, in the Champions League quarterfinals. And just as we get to the real business end of the season, Courtois is back. Militao is back. We walk La Liga and then let's see what we do in the Champions League. Now, of course, now the Courtois part of that equation is not happening. The only silver lining, I guess you might say, is that Andre Lunin has surprised absolutely everybody and had an exceptional season, I think, as deputy for Thibaut Courtois. So that's the good news. But there's no doubt this is a blow for Real Madrid.
There's not much to add, is there?
No. Well, no, but to think that Thibaut Courtois was going to come in after being out with an ACL injury and was going to have the explosion in his legs and in the spring and going to be able to make that big save that Real Madrid would potentially need against Manchester City would have been unrealistic to begin with. And that, I think, is the part that people just kind of get ahead of themselves. There's a difference between being back to training, full training, and then being fit to play at the elite world-class level of Thibaut Courtois. It's a big leap. And it doesn't happen overnight. And that's why when there was this conversation about Thibaut Courtois, it's like, look, okay, I understand. He's feeling better. He's getting better. He's going to get back to training. But that doesn't mean that he takes the jump to the elite level after a couple of weeks in training. I just never really saw it as a true possibility. While Real Madrid may say it otherwise, and Ancelotti may say otherwise, and Real Madrid fans will say otherwise, I got to tell you, from the perspective of the players, it was a big ask to begin with.
Yeah, it was never going to happen.
No?
No.
All right, then. OK.
Never.
Meanwhile, we've been talking since the draw has been made about reasons why you would be optimistic if you're a Real Madrid fan going in to this quarterfinal against Manchester City. And we are struggling to find too many reasons, given what we've seen from Manchester City, given Real Madrid and the manner of the defeat that we saw last season. Alex saw that. Very angry with everyone. He's saying, wait a minute, I've given lots of reasons why I feel Real Madrid are legitimate contenders to go through against the semi-finals. I think it's definitely going to happen.
I feel like you might be not exactly quoting me word for word there, Dan, saying it's
That's not like you, Dan.
Yeah, there might be a touch of exaggeration there, but I can give you some reasons for Real Madrid to be optimistic. Okay, here are some of them. A guy called Jude Bellingham, have you heard of him? He's amazing. He joined Real Madrid last summer. His impact has been huge. He makes a difference for this Real Madrid team. Vinicius Junior, I think, is a better, more well-rounded player than he was last season. He's in the form of his life. He's a more versatile attacking player than he has been in the past. I think his form is absolutely crucial. Elsewhere in the team, I think players like Fede Valverde is having an exceptional season, getting better every year. Camavinga is getting better every year. Dani Carvajal is probably having the season of his career in terms of his form. Antonio Rudiger, by far, having his best season in a Real Madrid shirt to date. He's compensated for the absence of Militao, the absence of Alaba. Yes, there are questions. There's questions about who partners Rudiger at the back. There's questions about the form of someone like Rodrigo Gomez, who hasn't been scoring enough goals, who's been key for Real Madrid in the Champions League in the past. There's questions about having someone like Josselu to come off the bench as your sort of first-choice backup option in attack. And like I say, there's Lunin, who's been great. He's surprised everybody. But is this a goalkeeper who can win you a Champions League? I don't know about that. But I think there are enough reasons there for Real Madrid to be at least optimistic about having a chance against City. Are they definitely going through? No. Are they favourites? Maybe not. But this is Real Madrid and this is the Champions League. Like, we don't want to be ruling them out, I don't think.
But I think the problem is, as we've seen every game from Real Madrid this season, out of those matches, there aren't many that you saw and you thought, wow, this team is really clicking. This team is really special. This team can really go somewhere this season. They just seem to have huffed and puffed their way to the top of La Liga as opposed to blown away the opposition in doing so.
Yeah, and maybe some of their rivals haven't been that great. Maybe that's part of it as well. I think that's fair. Best performances this season from Real Madrid, you'd probably think about when Girona went to the Bernabeu and they blew Girona away. Of course, at that point, Girona were their closest title rivals and they just couldn't live with Real Madrid. Otherwise, yeah, there have been games where Madrid have been dominated. Think about even games that they've won. Think about the Clásico with Barcelona in Barcelona earlier in the season when Madrid ended up winning that game thanks to two goals from Jude Bellingham. Barcelona were the better team. Think about the Madrid derby. Atletico won the Madrid derby earlier in the season back in September, certainly at the Metropolitano. So, yeah, I think that's fair, but I also think this is a Real Madrid team, and it always has been, which gets up for these Champions League games in a way that it doesn't always get up for your weekly kind of get-it-done games in La Liga. So that's a fair point. They haven't always sparkled this season, Real Madrid, but still they've been far too good for everybody else domestically in Spain, at least. In the Champions League, yes, against Leipzig, they struggled. They got a bit lucky. But that sometimes happens with Madrid in the Champions League, I think, against so-called lesser teams. When it comes to serious opposition like City, I think they'll turn up and I think they'll at least give a good account of themselves.
That's the question. And that's obviously was the argument last season, Ali. Mm. It's like Real Madrid, when they hear that Champions League anthem, they turn into Superman. Ah. You know, everybody just ups their game completely. And then obviously, it all went wrong.
For those of you in the podcast, that's not good.
So, well, they can still hear the...
Well, I'm just saying. They didn't see the hand signal either.
It's hard, isn't it?
Well, it even as Alex was trying to make an argument for
Alex
Real Madrid,
was backtracking quite a lot.
Yeah, there was a lot of sort of like, here's the positive, but hey, here's the negative as well. And that's the thing with Real Madrid right now. You want to make an argument for them based upon the mystique and the history of the club in the tournament? Well, so be it. I'm not going to argue that Real Madrid has something different in Champions League and indeed offers something different in Champions League. Not going to argue that at all. But here's the thing, quite frankly. You are playing with two center backs that would be second choice center backs. right? That, I think that's a fair point to make. A goalkeeper who would be second choice goalkeeper, and at one point was third choice goalkeeper in Andre Looney. Fran Garcia and Ferland Mendy, it's a toss-up of who is better or worse on the day. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So now I've already given you 3 out of 4 positions in the back line and the goalkeeper as potentially big question marks. And then who's going to score the goals? Because that's a question mark as well. See, Karim Benzema was available last season when they play against Manchester City. We can agree that he's elite, that he's world class. Joselu is not that guy. Serviceable, but not that guy. Vini Jr. then has to take on some of that responsibility. And, of course, Jude Bellingham. We're asking a lot of players to do a whole lot more than what is required from them on a weekly basis, and to do it against Manchester City, who we consider to be the best team in the world. When you put all those things together, it's hard to make an argument for Real Madrid.
It's easy to make an argument for Real Madrid as to why they win La Liga. Of course, you feel that they've given Barcelona a bit too much of a head start. With 9 matches to go, they are 8 points ahead of the defending champions. But have we seen Xavi pull off one of the greatest managerial tactical decisions ever by pretending that he's going to leave at the end of the season? Because look what's happened. Ever since he said he was going to go, they are unbeaten. They've won 7 matches, of course, the latest of which a comfortable 3-0 victory at the Metropolitano away against Atleti. And such is the Champions League draw. You could very much foresee them making it through to the Champions League final. And who knows what could happen over 90 minutes. And would that mean Xavi could be manager next season? Sid addressed that at the weekend.
Xavi has just a little bit left the door open to the possibility of continuing should the season end well, and should people say, hey, look, how about you carry on? When Xavi announced that he was going, he was asked very directly, but what if you win the Champions League? He said, makes no difference. I am going. The last 3 or 4 weeks, and in particular the last fortnight, have been different, because every time he's asked, you know, could things change? Are things changing with these results? He keeps using this lovely Spanish phrase, which is a día de hoy, which is to say right now, today, nothing has changed. But it's always a día de hoy. It's always right now. There's no absolutely definitive, that's it, I'm out of here.
Oh, a día de hoy.
Yes,
well, Alex.
That's a really mysterious phrase.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you've got to remember what the reasons were for Xavi to make this decision in the first place, right? It's not that he doesn't want to be Barca manager. Of course he wants to be Barca manager. It's the only job that he wanted. The problem was he wasn't enjoying it because it wasn't going well. He felt like he was being treated badly by the press. The players weren't happy. He wasn't getting the results. Well, if enough of those circumstances change, does that change his mind now that they are getting the results? So now the atmosphere is better. The players seem strangely to be playing for him now that he said that he's off. The big question, of course, Sid mentioned it there, depending on how the season goes. So how well does the rest of the season have to go for Xavi to change his mind? You know, is going through the Champions League quarterfinals and getting to the semifinals, is that enough? Would it take getting to the final? Would it take winning a trophy, which seems unlikely at this stage, as we saw there, 8 points behind Madrid in La Liga and winning the Champions League? You'd think probably beyond this team, but I guess you never know. But that's the big question. How well does the season have to go for him to seriously reconsider? And what would it take for the club as well to go to him, for Joan Laporta to go to him and say, look, don't go, stay, because we think that you are, in fact, the guy to carry on. So there's a lot of ifs, there's a lot of kind of conditionals there. But like I said, the bottom line is, this is a guy who loves Barca, who wanted to be Barcelona manager, and said he was going because he was just so desperately sort of unhappy with the situation and the way they were playing. And he thought it was for the best for the team for him to go. So if that changes, that changes the equation for him as well.
Xavi's been in football a long time. And I know that we always say that, you know, it's about results. But from Xavi's point of view, he's not stupid, you know. Him deciding to leave wasn't just because of results. He must have thought that this team's not good enough, or am I good enough? I can't get a tune out of this team. And with all the pressure, and then you got to add that, you know, last year he wanted 4 players, so we were told, and he never got any of them. So you add all these things up, some good results aren't going to change his mind.
But you always tell me that managers have egos, yeah? So does this not feed the ego? If he goes on...
Yes, of course we do.
And takes a Champions League final, is he not thinking, hey, maybe I am good enough for this job? Maybe I should stay.
I don't believe so. As I said, you know, Alex saying they're getting results, right? But when you're sat and you're the coach and you see what's happening, you know the difference between, well, you know what, I've turned this team around and we are outplaying teams and we're deserving to win games. You can't turn around. You really can't turn around and say that very often about Barcelona.
The reason he's not
daft enough. He understands that, you know what, we might be getting some good results, but I can't go through this again next year. And I don't believe we're going to get players in because we don't have the money.
The reason this is a conversation, Ali, is because of the way the draw played out on Friday.
Uh-huh.
How would you rank them 1-4 most likely to make it through to the final between PSG, Borussia Dortmund, Atleti and Barca?
Barcelona, PSG.
So you would have Barcelona going to the final.
I have Barcelona going past PSG, and so I would have Barcelona going past Atletico Madrid and Borussia Dortmund. And so that's why I have Barcelona, PSG, Atletico Madrid, Borussia Dortmund.
Wow.
And look, if I were Xavi...
You're actually, not in a long steam, yeah? You agree?
I agree with Ali 100%.
And if I were Xavi, I actually take this opportunity, if indeed I make it all the way to Champions League final, and who knows, you go on to win it, you're right into the sunset. Yeah!
See ya.
See y'all later. Thanks for coming. Thanks for participating in this wonderful experience with me. I'm out. You guys keep your mess. I'm out of here.
How silly is all this, Alex, eh? Barcelona have been so critical. Have had just such a mess off the season. Most of it on it as well. And they could be Champions League finalists.
Oh, it's football, isn't it? I mean, this sort of thing happens. The other thing with Xavi, it's worth mentioning that sort of what he's been saying repeatedly after games over the last few weeks. And he keeps talking about his decision to leave and sort of talking about how he's been vindicated by the performances and by the results, which I'm not sure actually has always been the case, because the performances haven't always been as good as the results might suggest. It's almost sounded like he has been trying to convince himself that this was the right decision to go. And if he keeps saying it enough times, it starts to become true and he will start to believe it. And the fact that he keeps repeating it over and over again kind of makes you think that he is questioning it himself a little bit. Now, whether that's enough to actually act on those doubts and to change his mind is another question, but it feels to me like, at least for him, those doubts are there.
To try to make a connection between Xavi announcing that he's leaving and Robert Lewandowski scoring the goal that he scored this weekend when he's going away from goal and finds the far post off the post and in, which he hadn't been doing over the course of the season consistently, and say that that's happening due in part because Xavi announced that he was leaving, that's nonsense. Let me just tell you, nonsense. The game is gone and we're trying to make a connection between Lewandowski scoring and Xavi leaving.
Oh. So that segment was a complete waste of time.
I think so.
Add it to the list. Thank you very much, Alex. Much appreciated.
Thanks,
just a reminder, La Liga continues this weekend. On Friday, we see... Oh, no, it's not this weekend. It's this International Week.
Yes.
How could I forget it was International Week? Oh, 2 weeks' time. La Liga will return. Barcelona taking on Las Palmas at Montjuic. And then after that, big game at the Bernabeu. Real Madrid against Athletic Club. One of their hardest games when you look at their running between now and the end of the season.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
No international break for NWSL. It's around two of matches as Portland Thorns take on NY Gotham. That game is live on ESPN2 and ESPN Plus at 7 p.m. Eastern. And to reflect on what happened in the opening weekend, plus they'll be looking ahead to those US men's internationals, be sure to check out Football Americas, which drops tonight. It's live on ESPN Plus. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. We've got a special guest coming on for extra time.
Okay.
Because they didn't think you two could handle it, apparently. Needed some reinforcements.
Do we know them?
Pardon?
Do we know them?
No. No, it's something completely new, Stevie. Stevie and Ali are with us, plus our mystery guest coming up on Extra Time next.
Who's that?
What a beautiful wild card to introduce.
This is a letdown.
Oh, Gav Marcotti. Good evening, Gav.
Good evening. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, what a treat.
What a nice surprise.
Thank you for coming. That's lovely. Yeah. There we are. The first question is not for Gab, though, so now we have to wait longer. I have to wait for the whole show, but don't worry.
Well, you could skip one and go back.
I can't interfere with the order. There's nothing to do with me. I get into trouble.
Director, producer.
Exactly. For Stevie, how would you handle the Nunez and Elliott errors that led to third and fourth United goals?
I mean, you just remind Nunez that, you know, if you're going to play a ball across the field, you have to put some air in it.
When do you do that?
Before the next game.
Right, OK. So you wouldn't have necessarily done it straight in the afterwards in the dressing room?
No.
No?
No, not at all. Do you think he doesn't know? So the last thing he needs is somebody piling on.
Right.
No, you wait till things have settled down, and then if you've got anything to say to anybody, that's when you do it. And the Elliott one is, there's nothing really you say.
Okay.
There's nothing really you say.
Right.
He's made a mistake. You move on.
What about your good friend Ronnie Moran? What would he have done?
I think in this situation he wouldn't have said anything after the game.
Okay.
I think he would do the same.
He would have left it.
He's experienced, yeah. He would have left. He would have told you. But he would have waited to the right time. His timing was always good.
Gab has waited patiently for 45 minutes to get his first question. And here it is, Gab. It really is a big one. because you hate flowers, Gab, start bench or sell roses, lilies or tulips? I didn't know you hated flowers.
Wow.
That's a tough one, isn't it?
Wow, that's a tough question.
I do not actually hate flowers. This is news to me. I don't have a particular
tabloids.
Fondness for flowers, to be perfectly honest, but I think I would start roses simply for classical reasons, and I appreciate the thorns, because without a little bit of pain, pleasure is kind of meaningless. I would bench the tulips, and I would drop the lilies entirely, because not my thing.
It's the first sentence on your Wikipedia page. Gab Marcotti hates flowers.
Somebody could have hacked that.
All right.
It's not really.
Oh, is it not? No. You know what I was thinking? When you said that, I was thinking
Somebody
about...
Somebody hacked that.
No, but the reason I said that is because as soon as you said that, I was thinking about Paul's Wikipedia page.
Right.
Somebody hacked in it and said his nickname was Big Bob or something.
Glad it was Bob. Good.
So that's where I went.
Gab, when Italy last won the Euros, you were hopeful that it was the beginning of a successful era. Looking back, were you a bit too optimistic? God.
Well, considering the guy that won the Euros is no longer there, I think part of me would make me think, yes, some of the guys that I thought were going to become really, really good, who weren't necessarily part of it, but could have been, like Nicolò Zaniolo, haven't lived up to it. But I think equally, there's generally been a sea change in the types of players Italian football produces. I think they're more attacking, they're more proactive, they're less scared of making mistakes. They're less good defensively, especially in individual defending. But, you know, it's the modern game. I think we have modernized that way. Now we just need to produce enough talented footballers to make it work. But you know, when it comes to not qualifying for the World Cup, a qualifying campaign, we've been through this a million times. They made really stupid mistakes at the wrong time, while also, I think, dominating most of the games they played in, unless they're playing Spain. So I don't read too much into that.
Did you see the Gab graphic? Yeah,
the nice hating flowers.
Yeah, the nice hating flowers. Your graphic has now been updated, Gav. So, fear not, as we...
Thank goodness we got the truth out there.
Put an end to that ugly rumour.
Thank you.
That could ruin careers. Ali, who's going through between Bayern and Arsenal?
Everything suggests that it should be and it would be Arsenal, because Arsenal will exploit the frailties defensively of Bayern Munich. I'm going to say Bayern Munich. Honestly, I'm going to go Bayern Munich, and that's because I find that Bayern Munich on the individual level can really hurt Arsenal. And a good game, and I know this is a lot to ask for, a good game, explosive game from Leroy Sané can make a difference. Jamal Musiala the same, and particularly Harry Kane. What is the one argument that we have against Arsenal time and time again? They don't have a number nine. They don't have a proven goal scorer. Well, Bayern Munich do. And you would imagine that this would be the sort of environment in which that proven number nine would make a difference. I'm going to take Bayern Munich, just even though I don't trust them in the midfield, and I don't trust them in the back line, and I don't trust them overall, I'm going to go Bayern Munich.
Gab, I've got to say, I really enjoyed your watch-along with Jules when the draw was happening. That was very good. But unfortunately, as you say, it's the last time we're going to be dealing with balls when it comes to the Champions League, because it's all going to be done by a computer now.
Exactly, which I'm sure will be equally fun. I mean, they worked out that if they were going to do it with balls, they would need something like 900 balls, and they sort of estimated that it would take around 4 hours. So,
imagine,
you know, 4 hours of Giorgio Marchetti pulling out balls and saying, you know, FC Kuban Krasnodar or whatever, and filling it in with trivia. Yeah, no, not going to happen. But yes, I had a lot of fun on the watch-along with Jules. And I like to think we're more fun to hang out with than Pedro Pinto, John Obi Mikel, and Giorgio Marchetti.
No, I thought it was great. One of my favourite bits is when you describe what a watch-along is. You're like, basically, we're going to watch along with the balls and then tell you what happens. Well, it was very, very impressive. Okay. Where are we?
Look, this was in case Stevie tuned in, right? I had to explain it to him.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough.
Thank you, Gab.
To the original question, who's going through, Gab, Bayern or Arsenal?
Yeah, so I think on the watch-along, funnily enough, I gave a very, very slight advantage to Bayern. There's no question Arsenal are a better team, but Arsenal are also involved in a three-way title race. I think that takes a lot out of you. Bayern, you know, season's over domestically. And I think also, if you look at the ingredients, individual match winners, shutdown goalkeeper, I think you would probably give the edge to Bayern there. And frankly, if you were to go 1-11, and this isn't a knock on Arsenal. In fact, it's praise for Arsenal. I'm not sure player for player, I'm not sure Arsenal have better individuals. Arsenal are a better team because I think they have a better manager, or certainly a manager is doing a much better job right now. So you put all those things together, and I think, you know, chuck in the inexperience of many of those Arsenal players, I think most people would lean Bayern no matter how turgid they've been.
Is shutdown keeper in your lexicon, Stevie? Have you heard that before? No, I don't think I've heard that before, Gab. Is this something you've invented?
No, it's not. It's something I've borrowed from the NHL, actually. I've introduced shutdown keeper. I will soon introduce a keeper who stands on his head, which is kind of the next level up.
Oh, there we go, then. That's from hockey.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, it's Gab.
It's kind of weird sitting listening to Gab and Ali saying so many good things about Arsenal.
Bayern?
And then, no, Arsenal.
Oh, okay.
The two of them were sitting saying all kinds of nice things about Arsenal.
Right.
And saying how bad Bayern were at the back, how bad they are in the middle.
Yep.
But they're going to win.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
Well, punditry, isn't it? Who do you think is going to win?
Arsenal.
There we are. Gab, will Nottingham Forest appeal of a points deduction be heard before the season ends? Could we have a scenario where we won't know who is being relegated until after the season finishes?
I don't think so. This is specifically why they introduced these kind of real-time rules, so that they wouldn't have something that drags on into the next season. Now, I guess it could be after the season finishes, but it would have to be, you know, a week, 2 weeks, certainly before the transfer window opens, that this all gets resolved. I mean, they specifically said, we're going to monitor your accounts week by week in real time, because we don't want punishments to be in the future. If you think of the points that Everton were deducted, you know, 6 points now after they got their deduction reduced, well, that's for, you know, offenses that didn't affect the teams around them, but it affected teams in the past who've now been relegated. So the thinking is that's not fair. So I think they have to figure out how they're going to do it this season.
Gab, will Juve get something done with Weston McKennie so he stays at the club beyond this season?
I think a lot's going to depend on whether they get something done with Max Allegri. McKennie's had a good season for Juve, but equally, you know, Juventus season as a whole has been not great. They're down to third place, and there's a lot of pressure on Allegri. If they move on from Allegri, it's going to depend on whether, you know, the new manager has Weston McKennie in his plans, because he is somebody that they feel that they could shift and they could get a fee for. Equally, if he sticks around, well, then they're going to have to probably extend his contract and give him a bump. And right now, money's very, very tight there.
Has his improvement in form matched the hype that some US soccer media has given him, Gab?
You know, it's funny because we had our big sort of FC digital meeting, and so we had all the writers, including all the guys in the US. And when I think it was Jules in a meeting said something mean about Weston McKennie, and somebody immediately piped up and said, well, he has the third highest minutes on Juventus this year, which sounded like a planted statistic.
Oh, I wish
frankly.
Craig was at that meeting.
Oh my God. Craig would have wreaked serious damage. No, look, he's playing better. Now, the thing is, this is a bad team. This is not a team that's playing well. In fact, weirdly, since they started playing slightly better football, they've been getting worse results. And, you know, even if you're kind of doing your part in that team, you know, it's also, he's been playing a lot of minutes on a team that's underperforming, which I guess is better than being benched on a team that's underperforming. But, you know, they're also low on numbers, right? He's a central midfielder. They're down two based on what they had at the beginning of the year, because Pogba got himself suspended and Nicolò Fagioli got himself suspended. So in that midfield rotation, Rabiot also got injured. So, you know, you're talking basically four or five guys for those three spots. And McKennie's certainly done his job when he's come in. But, you know, it's not like he turned into, Michel Platini all of a sudden. Or to put it in a USMNT context, he's not having a great a season as that other U.S. national team star, Christian Pulisic, is having.
Oh, yes.
But he's certainly having a better season than Gio Reyna. There you go. Oh. How's that?
Well, yes, I think I'm having a better season than Gio Reyna.
You've played more.
Gab, at the aforementioned meeting, I heard there was a team bonding darts tournament afterwards in which Rob, who, of course, was just on, did very successfully in. I thought you'd be good at darts, Gab. What, you're 6'5", big reach?
Yeah, and I tried to exploit the reach by leaning as far forward as possible. it was actually very funny because they sort of had that sort of overall finalists, and it came down to two, and it really was like a sort of a cartoon villain situation, because one of our editors, the very talented Caitlin Murray, was in there, and you know, she does not look like a darts player, certainly not an English darts player. And then you have Rob Dawson with his six pack, with his beard looming over her. He was a cartoon villain, and I think the entire pub was cheering on Caitlin. And guess what? For once, we had that Disney ending everybody wanted.
Oh,
Caitlin
beautiful.
Won, and deservedly so.
Oh.
What was the drinks? The darts match, was it tea, coffee, beer,
water? Still.
what was going on?
They had a range of beverages. They had a range of beverages, both adult beverages and non-alcoholic ones.
Why are you asking?
I just wondered.
What, you're missing out?
I just wondered. I would like to have been there.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
You, I imagine, are good at dance.
No, I can't see.
Oh.
I can't see that.
I thought you'd be good at dance.
I used to be. I used to play in the pub team.
There you are?
Yeah.
So you'd play Liverpool and Anfield in front of 60,000 and then down the pub for the darts team?
Yep, darts team.
And were you in the pool team as well?
Yeah.
Did Eleanor not mind this?
No.
No.
Darts Monday.
Oh, dear.
Pool Tuesday.
Right. Yeah. Oh, lovely.
Oh, okay.
When was date night?
Wednesday.
Date night, what's that?
Go on, tell the dart story. Was it the pool story when you won £500 and a fish?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Oh, we do it another day?
Yeah, it's too long.
Oh, the fish.
Buy Stevie's book. It's all in there. It's very good. I think it's probably cut price at the moment. Clearance.
What do you mean at the moment? It started at cut price.
They're the back special.
They're the ones with Mark's signature.
Yeah.
He's paying you.
Thank you.
Ali, what was your most fluky goal? Off your face, your backside?
Well, I've done both.
Yeah?
I've done backside and I've done...
Talk us through the backside.
I actually scored a non-goal with my backside as well. Oh. I was marking in a corner kick. Somebody headed the ball at the near post. I had my guy covered at the back post, off my backside and into the side netting. My kind of range, by the way, so even a non-goal was my kind of range. Yeah, backside, we were playing against...
What are you laughing at?
I'm laughing, I've seen all these goals.
Yes, I know.
Like, generally, most people, when they score a goal, you can tell that they've scored it and how it's happened.
Yeah, the thought process.
But a lot of Ali's goals, you kind of... You need a replay. You need to see the replay on the screen. You see, who did it come off? Oh, it came off Ali.
Yes.
That's it. There
you go. You shall take it.
It came off Ali. Face, backside, whatever it takes.
Okay, Gab, we've talked about your holidays, of course, that you've been on recently, and it's a Start, Bench or Drop Holiday Edition special.
Ooh.
Antarctica, Tanzania, or skiing in the Alps?
Oh, all right, so I really enjoyed all of them. I'm obviously going to start Antarctica because that really is kind of a once in a lifetime situation.
It takes terrible
It's tough between the other two, but I think just because I spent so much time in the Alps growing up and stuff, I'm going to go skiing in the Alps. And then sadly, I would have to drop Tanzania, but all three fantastic, fantastic holidays.
Where's the worst place you've been on holiday?
The worst?
Yeah, I was going to go best, but I can't imagine that you have a best because it's travelling, you get angry.
There's only really one place I went to that I was scared.
You were scared?
Yeah.
Right.
And I had to get out as quick as possible, me and my assistant.
Oh.
We went to Niger to watch a tournament. It's the only place I've ever felt scared.
Right.
And we, after the day, we went, right, we need to go out here.
It's not really a holiday.
Yeah, that's not a vacation.
You're working. It was a business trip.
All right. Vacation.
I think it's Niger.
Best place, if you want to give a best place.
Really a best place.
Okay, all right. There we go.
Okay. There.
Dan, what are you doing? Just stay in your lane and ask him about pool and dogs.
Shepherd's pie.
It doesn't really matter where I go. I do the same things.
What do you do, Steve? What's Stevie like on holiday?
Couple of pills, not a lot.
I told Stevie today that I ate shepherd's pie, and when I told him that he had corn, the disdain, the look of disappointment and frustration.
Yeah, you got to change your terminology.
I think we'll finish this segment quite happily by letting Gab just see his new nameplate, just so we can just justify everything that has been said.
Yeah.
He's co-host of the Gab and Jules show. He denies hating flowers.
Correct.
He's bad at darts.
Correct.
And he takes terrible vacations.
Oh, wow.
Oh, there we are.
Last one is tough.
That is. ESPN SC then will be back on your screens tomorrow. James Ollie with us to talk about what's going on at Chelsea and the booing of Sterling. And what did you make of that, Stevie? Booed by his home fans.
I thought it was disgusting.
Yeah, we talked about it at length yesterday. Like, you had it with Venezuela as well, didn't you, Ali?
At a training session. It wasn't even the game. I wasn't even at the game yet. I haven't even done badly yet. I was already being booed.
Can't call yourself a fan.
We will be discussing that in more detail tomorrow. Be sure to join us.